Now we'll ask Liz and her team. It looks like you are there. I think initially this is a time for board members to ask additional questions from either the comments we heard this morning or comments we've taken from the public or the counties that you'd like to raise with Liz and her team. So I'll look for hands raised or comments. And I see Joe Justice with his hand up. So Joe, why don't you start?
All right, I guess I'll try to get myself unmuted and my video started again. I guess my first comment, and I guess maybe to open up some discussion regarding the question about delaying the decision or giving this board another month of decision. I understand from stakeholders the concern. This is a very big decision. It's going to put us on a path, and to consider this for another month is something I guess I'd like to talk about. What are potentially, I guess, a question for the department? Would they be able to bring the economic and social impacts and have a more robust discussion in a month regarding that, regarding this decision? So I guess I just lead it with that question. I would just open that up for other board members' thoughts because it's a concern of mine.
So this is Liz. Did you want us to respond to that, Joe, or is this a
question? Yeah, please.
Sure. So I can start with that. As I said in my opening comments, recognize the difficulties that our stakeholders had in terms of wanting that information sooner so that they could do some of their own evaluations, have some exchange, and come to a better understanding and of sort of what was on the table. So really understand that and don't want to diminish that. A couple things to keep in mind here. There really would be huge limitations in our ability to do additional rounds of modeling between now and November. And I would submit that we'd be in the same situation where any model results wouldn't be out with any kind of, you know, significant time frame ahead of another board meeting. So I'm not sure that there's a lot to be gained there. There's also a part of the NEPA process in which there's an analysis of the financial considerations for rural communities. So that there are, you know, that sort of flanks, I think, in time, if you will, sort of, well, what could be done between now and November, and then towards the end of the process, what happens in NEPA. There's a lot of work to be done between here and there, so to speak, between those two bookends, and we will be able to, in part, really refine our models and be able to engage our stakeholders on what we think the outcomes are likely to be, especially as we refine and finalize the HCP. So those will be my opening comments, and I'll see, Brian, would you like to add to that?
Yeah, I think I'll add in a little bit, and definitely I think we could hear from other board members, that'd be good too. Liz is absolutely correct. For the November board meeting, I'm looking at Hillary, but I think the materials are due this Friday for that board meeting. And so that gives you a perspective of, we do not have the time to do additional analysis for November. And if we pushed it out further, then we would be out many months. When we were doing this work with the comparative analysis and the modeling, we were really focused on developing the habitat conservation plan and at the same time bringing a document, a comparison to the board for decision making. And so again, probably 80, 90% of our work was focused on developing that draft HCP and then providing information for the board for decision making. In there, we realized we could not provide answers to every question. And we did have other stakeholders that wanted us to do more analysis on the riparian areas, more analysis on the landslide hazards, more analysis on carbon too. And while we were not able to do everything, when we looked at the social impacts and we heard from the counties and other local governments, quite often or always, in my recollection, they pointed to timber harvest volumes as a surrogate for a way to calculate jobs. And so we did focus on a lot in the comparative analysis on timber harvest volume. And yes, we didn't do the calculations for the jobs, but that was the surrogate, is looking at that volume, not only for revenue, those direct payments to the counties and the local taxing districts, but also to the jobs. And so one thing that we did, we didn't speak to it today, I spoke to it in July, is that we know those local jobs are important, and we know those local jobs are driven by the timber harvest. So we have three subgeographic regions to distribute that volume across the regions. And quite frankly, if we didn't do that, if we just set up the model to achieve the highest harvest level, it would just harvest mainly in the North Coast and not in the Willamette Valley and not in the southern area. And so we know jobs are important down in Coos Bay. We heard that from John Sweet, and we know jobs are important across Western Oregon. So we try to distribute that volume using the subgeographic areas.
Joe, do you have a further question on this? I don't want to stifle a conversation. I've got a couple other hands up, and I don't know if they're on this topic or a related one, so I'll just ask them. Nils and Jim both have hands raised. I thought I'd see if either of you want to have something to say about, I guess, what I'd call the timing question that Joe has raised, or if it's something else, if it's the timing question, if you do, go ahead. If not, we'll just wait a second, and then Nils would have the next question. So.
This is Jim, and I, on the timing question, I guess, I have a lot of sympathy for what some of these stakeholders have been saying, and Seth has said, and positions from Steve Zika. At the same time, we're a little bit between a rock and a hard place. Clearly I know how fast these things go, and listening to Liz, we're just not going to be in a very different place here 1 month from now. You know, maybe if we took 6 months or something, then there could be something, quite a bit of substantive movement, but I don't think that's realistic. So it's frustrating. But I think there, the process, the NEPA process is going to have public input, and a lot of the things also that will be needing to be talked about will be a part of conversations with the companion forest management plan. So I'm not convinced that delay is going to get us anywhere.
And I guess for what it's worth, I'd probably associate myself with the comments that you just made, Jim. I think that a lot of what we've heard almost sounds like what we would be voting on today is the very end result. And it would be instead, I think, moving this to the next step in the process, in which there would be a lot of time and ability to, do more technical work and to refine this further. Nils, I'll turn to you for your question or comment. And then I see Brenda's hand up after that.
Thanks, Tom, and thanks to the ODF staff and also everybody who has commented today. This effort started even before my board term started. I think it started back in November 2011, and it has been a long journey with a lot of work. And there's obvious and there's a lot at stake for all Oregonians, as evident in the tremendous outpouring of concerns and hopes that were conveyed to us in the various communications prior to this meeting. And I appreciate that. My hope is that we are slowly finding a way to think holistically about these solutions that have divided us now for a long time, that it doesn't have to be an either or between environment and jobs and urban and rural, and that we recognize that there's an imperfect middle path probably, but and that there's a lot of uncertainty, but we need to move forward with with the right intentions and values and team to make progress. And there are obviously open questions in a tremendous amount of analysis that's been released, but I kind of think about it from that historical perspective where we're at. And rather than go on at length, I just want to raise with Liz and Brian right now one question. If you could speak to the question that many individuals have raised about the financial impacts to the State Forest Division. I actually looked back in my board packets going back over my term here on the board, and I've seen similar declining revenue curves projections for the Forest Development Fund throughout my term, and you all have tended to beat those projections. Thank goodness. I'm curious, though, the current projections are worrisome. They show significant losses, and it would be great if somebody could speak to either how we make up those losses or whether we think with refinements in the modeling you'll be able to improve that, or whether it is sort of just a reaffirmation of a point that's been made since the beginning, that the future of the State Forest Division is dependent on timber harvest revenues, business improvements, but also looking for other revenue to address the diverse roles and services and values that the state forests serve. So over to you, Brian, Liz.
Yeah, Nils, thanks for the opportunity to provide some clarity on the comparative analysis and then the reality of how we run the business of the State Forest Division. And so first, let me talk a little bit on the comparative analysis. And again, we use that as a relative trends. And so we aren't using the comparative analysis to predict our future. We don't expect those to be absolute numbers. We use the comparative analysis to project expected trends. And so let me give you an example of what we're talking about. In the last 10 years, our average stumpage price, our average price for timber, has ranged from $250 a thousand board feet on the low end to $535 on the high end. And so that's a big price range when our harvest is about the same, about 220 million board feet a year. So with that information, when we did the comparative analysis, we didn't try to predict those price undulations. We put in an average price of around $350. So a very flat average in there. And then same thing with our expenditures. We put in kind of what they are today and projected them out in the future. So when you look at the comparative analysis, and it's a pretty stark number that in that first 15-year period, we would be deficit spending. That's what it's saying in the HCP implementation, around $13 million a year. And so that's a lot, and that's worrisome, but recognizing those numbers aren't our expected reality. But the reality that we live in is that the division is about 98% funded on that harvest the sale and harvest of timber. And that is a commodity that swings greatly. And so some real numbers that we've had to deal with is in a good way in 2019, we put $19 million in the bank and we put that in the forest development fund because our revenue exceeded our expenditures by $19 million. That was a great year. But you roll back from 2019 and you drop back 10 years to 2009 and we deficit spend $7 million. And so there's that range of in 10 years, one year we put almost $20 million in the bank and another year we had a deficit spend about $7 million. And so that's the business model that we're in and we have to adapt to it and change to it. So again, think about the HCP and in the relative sense, it's the best opportunity to achieve the most financial viability. But none of those options would solve all our financial problems in any scenario, in any market condition. And nor would any op plan be able to be developed that way and still meet the tenants and the mandates of greatest permanent value. So we do other things. And we've talked to you about this over the years, so I'll just remind you of a few, but we do other things like our reorganization that we went through. And so we reorganized around our staffing to be as efficient and as effective as possible with the fewest number of staff. And we still carry about 200 full-time staff, but that reorganization really helped us. Another thing we've worked on in the past 5 years is marketing, really focusing on getting the most value for every tree that we sell. And we market different than we have in the past. We've flexed our volume a little bit year over year. We've looked for good markets to sell more in the higher markets, and the way we sell it has changed a little bit too. And so that brings more value. We have in the past, you know, cut services, and that's hard. We've still been able to manage the forest, but not at the full implementation level of the current plan. And there has been many years since the plan inception in 2000 that we weren't at full implementation. And that was not the best, but it was a way to survive through market conditions using the funding we have. We kind of grow and use what we have. One of the things to consider, though, is in the current plan, when we have lean economic times, we drop back to kind of the level two implementation, which maintains activities necessary for greatest permanent value, but also prioritizes and emphasizes high economic returns. And so the timber sales and the other things. In this scenario going forward, if we commit to an HCP, that conservation funding in an HCP is not discretionary. It's a federal agreement. It's a federal obligation that we would fund conservation. And so as we go through ups and downs in the markets, we would hold constant the conservation commitments along with the focus on timber harvesting. And so it's another way to say we would commit to durable conservation because we'd be committing to that funding. So again, we've seen those projections before. We're able to adapt to them by changing our service level and our staffing levels. We expect we'll have to do that into the future. And we expect we'd have to do that under any plan under greatest permanent value. I don't know if Liz or Peter wants to add more to that.
No, I think you covered that really well. I will remind you that when we started the revision of the FMP, after I became state forester, I've been very clear from the beginning that revising the FMP will not solve a financial viability problem. In 2017, we added the HCP to that, so there shouldn't be an expectation that that solves our financial viability problem. And as Brian mentioned, the one thing that was fully under our control is our business improvement processes, and we did move forward, and we have successfully implemented a leaner, more adaptable workforce that can expand and contract in good and bad times. We've introduced log short sales. There's been significant improvement. And if you remember back on those dire projections, we were supposed to go to broke 10 years ago, you know, when the first financial viability work group got together. We're currently in the best financial position State Forest has been in a number of years since that financial viability report, due to their prudent management. But I still think it's going to take other revenue sources, particularly to support our recreation, education, and interpretation program. This board moved forward a request for that. I think we need to look at more sources than just general fund. We need other types of funding to pay for the public benefits that we provide. So I think it'll be a combination of things as we move forward.
Mills, is that take care of you for the moment? And then I've got hands up from Brenda, Cindy, and Jim. I guess I want to ask if any of you are chiming in on this topic, or if it's a different topic, a related topic. If it's different, then I'll move next to Brenda. But if this is sort of hard to figure out in the Zoom world how we don't disrupt one conversation and go to another. But if you guys are okay, I'll call on Brenda next, unless you wanted to chime in on this. Okay, so Brenda.
Yeah, thanks, Tom. For some reason, I can't start my video. I'm not quite sure what's going on there, but I just wanted to say that I listened very carefully to the testimony by the stakeholders, and I am concerned about the impacts on local communities and the counties. And I also feel, though, that the analysis that was done by staff, the comparative analysis, even though those projections were relative differences, they do provide us with the information that let us understand if we're making a decision that's going to be one that's likely to provide the greatest certainty into the future in terms of what those timber harvests could be to support the local economies on the coast. But I also think, and I'm looking to staff here, Liz and Brian and others, there's still some work to do. So if we do move forward today and agree to go forward with NEPA, the Companion Forest Management Plan and listening to comments through the NEPA process and how those comments will be addressed still provide some more work to be done. And at the end of it, I think should, I hope, give us a clearer picture of what the revenue or timber volume forecast might be for these local communities. Is that a reasonable assessment, Liz and Brian?
Yeah, thank you, Brenda. I think that is. And, you know, while it's kind of a couple of big bins, if you will, you know, the things that we're really thinking about with U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and we'll take up as well with counties and stakeholders, is what are the management activities, what are the constraints, or otherwise the lack of constraints, if you will, in terms of management, specific management approaches within HCAs and outside of HCAs. And so there was some information provided from Nick and Mike around, you know, the areas that are less constrained than others. And so it's really kind of digging into that, those pieces, Brenda. And in doing so, that does, I would argue, help us sharpen the pencil in terms of what the financial outcomes are gonna look like. And so that's just one example that I would offer. Welcome other folks to chime in.
Thanks, Liz.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. I think the more we work on this, both the HCP to get it into the NEPA process, but then more importantly, the Companion Forest Management Plan with the Board of Forestry, the more we understand or have surety around those outcomes. And so, you know, we have proposed, and we'll talk more in January about what that schedule actually looks like, but let's just say for now, 18 months, 2 years, while we're doing that work, we would continue to do analysis and bring more information to you, the board, for that final decision in 2022. And so sometime in 2022 in the summertime, you'd have the Companion Forest Management Plan that had gone through rulemaking, which makes it a, you know, a stable document. You'd have the HCP that had gone through the NEPA process, which makes that stable in time. you know, no changes, if you will. But then also we do another information document. I'm not sure what that would be, but an information document similar to the comparative analysis where we'd have more certainty around the numbers and a better projection and prediction of what the future outcomes would be. And that is really the crucial vote, whether that's accepted and go forward or we stay with the current plan.
Yeah, thank you, Brian. That clarifies things a lot. And I just want to kind of reflect on that, because we're not going to have that higher level of certainty that I think many stakeholders would like until we've continued to proceed through the process. So I guess I don't see a value in pausing things for a month. I think we're going to have that clarity toward the end of this whole process. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Brenda. Cindy?
Yeah, thank you. I wanted to comment basically on that same thread of the conversation, and that is the NEPA process, at least as I understand it, is fundamentally a public involvement and analytic step. And for all of the decisions that I've been involved with in various ways, you know, over the last 45 years, I have never entered a NEPA process with this much analysis already done. You go into the NEPA process with lots of questions and very few answers. So it does not make sense to me to delay either to try to get more answers before we even really start the formal analytic process for the decision making. I think if we want to get those, I think it's very critical that we get those hard numbers on both the financial viability question and the, you know, all the associated economic, jobs, social, community support that we all want in order to be able to make a decision. But to my mind, that is actually the function of the NEPA process, because that's the way you get those answers, is through that analysis. It also is a process that allows us, or you all, because I won't be here by the time the NEPA process ends and a decision comes back to the board for a decision, but it also provides the information necessary to sort of modify what the future board, as it's going along, will come up to as whatever their ultimate decision is. So simply because we launch a NEPA process, if we decide today, launch it on the basis of the information we have now, the process itself is elastic in terms of allowing the details of the HCP and its companion FMP to be modified as we learn more. So it would not make sense to me to delay till November today's decision on that basis, as well as the fact that it's unlikely we'd actually end up with any more information at hand to make a decision in November than we already have now. So I would strongly support the idea of moving ahead to get the more that further detail and that further information that we're all wanting to put our hands around through the NEPA process. So that's what that's designed to do.
Okay, and I see Jim has hand raised, and then yeah. Joe.
Sure, I wanted to talk just a little bit about all of the feedback, all the testimony that we've gotten, which is the written testimony. We've just had a tremendous amount, as well as testimony today. A lot of great information. But I also wanted to speak to the fact of how much passion there is in a lot of that testimony, and a lot of, particularly on the side of timber and timber families and rural communities, a lot of frustration and distrust, I think, of this board and its members. And so I wanted to say a couple things about that. I mean, we're not going to make everybody happy here today. We're But, you know, our job as board members, obviously, is to represent all of the people of Oregon. And I think that, that all of us take that quite seriously. And I, you know, some of the feedback has included, you know, pleading with us not to have our state forests end up managed like our federal forests or mismanaged like our federal forests. And I'd certainly, you know, as I look around at my fellow board members and look at myself, there are none of us who begin to want to see our state forests managed the way our federal forests have been in recent decades. And so I just really want to give that kind of reassurance going forward that I think all of us are very cognizant of the issues on both sides and very concerned about the industry, about rural Oregon and the jobs. So
enough said. I appreciate that. I think that's very well stated. I mean, at times we've incurred a little distrust from a whole variety of stakeholders depending on decisions that we're making. But I think that everybody here is, you know, starting from a place of really wanting to, of having a lot of respect for all of the different folks who have interest in how our forest lands are used. And we're trying to solve a problem. And the problem in trying to solve that problem is there is probably no perfect solution. So that's what we end up dealing with. Joe, I think you've got your hand up, and then I think Nils does again.
Yeah, thank you. Jim, I couldn't agree more. I don't think any of us want to see state forests managed as our federal forests are managed, you know, living and working in rural Eastern Oregon, where I've seen the results of that and the impacts to these communities, that really resonates and hits home with me. I guess I'll just make one comment. You know, the HCP brings a certainty related to conservation. That's wonderful. And I really appreciate the great work years there. I think for HCP ultimately to be successful in 2022, we're going to have as much commitment to make sure we still achieve the social and economic alignment with greatest permanent value. So that would be my own comment. Thank you.
It's a good comment. Nils?
Yeah, I think I'm just building on that. You know, I mean, the only thing I would just add is just a reminder that where the state has broadly embraced values and visions related to DEI, as Ann Kubich said at the Oregon Business Summit last year, rural, the inequity of geography of being from a rural place is the one metric that has not improved over the last 10 years. And there has been, you know, tremendous transformation in the state, national, and global economies, and as well as demographics that have shifted people and wealth and business creation to a few urban centers. And it is really important, as you said, Joe, and as Tom and Jim have iterated, and Brenda, that we, you know, remember the importance of these forests to a broad range of jobs, and we also understand that the harvest of trees alone is not going to solve the rural future. That we need to collectively embrace innovation and creative ways to revitalize rural places, but being stewards of natural resources for products, for the products that society needs, plus the diverse ecosystem and recreation values that it provides. Those are jobs that require real skills. They require passion. They generate dignity within our rural communities. And we need to find that path that maintains those opportunities as we balance all of these different issues. Thanks.
Great, thank you. Yes, Peter.
I just wanted to thank Niels for those comments. Fortunately, the governor recognizes rural areas is currently underserved in Oregon and includes that in her diversity, equity, inclusion efforts, and particularly around climate change, which we will be working on in November. She identifies the need to maintain a strong timber industry and economic effect for the rural community. So I think that's well spoken, Niels, and just wanted to thank you for that comment.
Thanks. I don't see any other hands raised, so I guess at this point I'd see if we have a motion to adopt the staff recommendation, the staff recommendation being that the board direct staff to finalize the administrative draft HCP and move into the NEPA process.
So moved.
Seconded.
It's been moved and seconded. Is there any further discussion? Okay, we'll do a roll call vote. Nils Christofferson.
Aye.
Cindy Deacon Williams.
Aye.
Joe Justice.
Aye.
Jim Kelly.
Aye.
Brenda McComb.
Aye.
Mike Rose is absent. And I'm Tom Imeson. I'm an aye. So the motion carries by all members here present today. So thank you everybody for the board members and Peter and his staff and all of those who have participated in this process. It's a big piece of work, obviously, but it has a lot, as we've all said, it has a long, long way to go and will continue to get refined. I'll see if there are any other comments and then we'll adjourn this meeting and resume an executive session at 4:30, which is about 15 minutes. Any other comments? Great.
Jim has his hand up.
Oh.
Yeah, I did. I just, you know.
Fine with the hands up, but every now and then I.
Sorry. Since we've got a couple of minutes, I know it's not on our agenda, but I have found those few minutes at the end of our meetings where we talk about what went well and process very useful. So looks like what we have just a few minutes. What is there interest in doing that?
Sure. I didn't think of it so much on this one because usually it's what do we need to follow up on? And I think we know what we need to follow up on. But sure, I think that'd be fine if you've got something to on that list.
This is really about process, but I did really note today that that as we look at the people who are in our conference room at ODF headquarters, that you really can't see their faces. And you know, the advantage of Zoom versus just a telephone call, supposedly, is we were actually able to see each other. And I don't know if that's kind of been recognized, but you know, so the communication for people like Liz or any of the people in that room I would argue it would be better if they were either at home or, you know, in their own office with their own screen. It would actually work better than having those, you know, 3, 4, 5 people that are in that room. I don't know what other people think of that, but I just noticed that today.
Hey, this is Peter. Thanks for that, Jim. We have thought about that and discussed that. And part of the reason for minimizing and keeping the board as a primary panelist is because we're really trying to encourage the board to discuss as opposed to, you know, having discussions with the staff when it comes to decision making. Although we did alter it because we try to get the camera more focused on the team as a whole, hence I moved to bringing a computer in and being in a part of the regular panel. So it's a debate there. We have we do recognize that it seems there isn't the same level of discussion among the boards in the virtual setting. And so we're being very cognizant about ensuring the board engagement in this process amongst themselves is probably more important than just engagement with staff. But I hear what you're saying, and we will think more about that. But I also want to think about, we're thinking about bringing in a facilitator for the retreat because of that very dynamics as well, although we're not having that this year. So just pros and cons for a virtual environment, I think.
Okay. The other thing that I wanted to mention that I thought worked well today, but I have a question about it as well, and that is, setting up a deadline so that we were getting most of the written testimony early. It was really wonderful to just have a couple of days to actually be able to go through that testimony, especially since we had so much this time. And so that seemed good. I don't know, the question I have about that process, I know it was communicated that there was a deadline, but I also noticed that it, when testimony came in from the Forest Trust Lands folks last night, that was, past the deadline, that was forwarded to us. So I don't know what our legal constraints are. So is it really a deadline, or what's our process going forward?
Well, I think what it's been a request. I don't think it's been a legal deadline. And I suppose the board, if it wanted to going forward, could adopt, it would have to adopt by rule or by some means, something like that. It's not just our saying it. We'd have to go through some, I think that's true anyway. We'd have to go through a process, or you would have to go through a process.
I don't know that we need a rule that necessarily. Anyhow, I think it mostly worked, and that was great.
But I think people have tried, for the most part, they have tried to comply with those requests.
I thought the public involvement process worked really well this time, both the receipt of the majority of the comments early enough so that we had the opportunity to review them, but also I thought the I also thought the public comment received today went very well. I thought the panels were well organized for the invited testimony, and I definitely appreciated the role, Hillary, that you played in logistics that I'm sure you had to deal with in order to let folks that signed up to comment have that opportunity at the meeting. I really appreciated that.
Yeah, and I think this may be the first time, I'm not sure, where we have actually had to say we can't take everybody. It's one of the things when you're doing something the way we're doing this through Zoom, you notice that it's a little harder to change things on the fly. If you're taking less time, it's not hard. If you're taking more time and you throw people off that you've, scheduled a time to appear. So it's one of the, I think it has been a plus to be able to, in terms of managing the schedule. And I think that Hillary and Jason did a really good job with that, with those who were appearing, so.
I think Hillary deserves a big huzzah from all of us. It's quite something to pull this off.
Yes.
Thanks, guys. You can't see my face, but I'm going a little red in the cheeks. And this is Hillary, for the record. I just wanted to say a quick thank you, actually, to all of the exec support team that has been helping make this happen, as well as the logistics, IT, and public affairs. So this is a team effort, and I really do appreciate your kind words.
Great. Any other things for the good of the order here? All right. Well, then we will reconvene an executive session. We'll have Peter there for the beginning of that. We'll have Hillary there for that meeting. Otherwise, it'll be just the board, and unless there is any media that has signed up to participate in that. Do you know if there, Hillary, do you know if there, if we have any media folks who are intending to?
Not that signed up for media. Nope.
All right.
10 minutes. We'll meet you over there. Do we have to get set up in another room?
Yes, we don't. We just have to stay here and. But we can take a
stretch your legs.
Yes.
Thank you, Tom.
Thank you. Hey, Niels, if you're still in this, I just want to remind you, you need to go to actually leave this meeting and then go to the next one. But maybe you're the only one that looks like you might still be here.